Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are just as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They're milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
911 emergency.
Search goes on in San Francisco for the man known as the Zodiac Killer.
In New York, the search continues for the .44 caliber killer.
See if you can explain to me why I would want to be a Scientologist.
Betches Media presents...
Tell me we have a lead.
Stone Cold, no.
It was literally like the Hunger Games.
Not another true crime podcast.
What can I say? Tough titties.
It's all fun and games until someone gets hurt.
Hey guys, welcome to another quarantine edition episode of Not Another True Crime Podcast. Danny is doing some cool head toss on video chat. He's dancing.
Water seltzer out of a stemless wine glass that say, build your own empire, girl boss. So quarantine
Wait. Who gave that to you? They're in a multi-level marketing scheme.
I'm not joking. I think my mom got it from one of her coworkers who's definitely in one.
No. The tracks. Casey looks very comfortable in a hoodie.
You guys, I just had a bunch of loungewear from Target delivered to my home. I've never been happier with a little hooded sweatshirt. Because we've been, nobody in the world has been talking about anything else but Tiger King. It's a leopard onesie pajama I'm wearing. Yeah. Yeah.
You need to post about that on the socials.
Should I do a try on for loungewear?
Yeah, do like an unboxing.
An unboxing
for
of this
Target. Time.
Yes.
That would be awesome.
So I am very comfortable, very happy to be in my home in my sweats.
Love it. I mean, same. I think the one lesson that I've learned from this is like I may never go back to wearing anything other than leggings and a sweatshirt ever again.
I think sweatshirts are back.
Why did I used to get dressed for work?
There's no reason.
No.
None. Literally none.
We're trapped for upwards of 2 months in our apartments, and now we want to trap our thighs in buttons and like denim. I don't think so. That's not going.
You're right. Well, sweatpants have gotten a huge glow up. Another glow up from quarantine has been banana bread. Have you guys noticed this? I feel like everyone's making it.
I'm considering it a super secret serial killer trait. Where is everyone getting the ingredients for it? And what are you hiding in the bread? Why do we only
They're hiding chocolate chips and maybe walnuts. But this I think the true. Reason is because my mom wanted to do this too. It's like everyone buys all these bananas. They go bad. And then you're like, what do I do with a bunch of brown and black bananas? It's the only thing is to make banana bread.
Because bananas in New York go bad in like two, like you have to buy them green in New York for them to something. So yeah, we've been making these, we call them healthy cookies, but I don't know if they are. But you do the brown bananas and you put like a cup of oats in there, like quick oats, and you let it soak. And then you put a scoop of peanut butter, like a big scoop of peanut butter, a little vanilla and some chocolate chips. And you bake them into what can be loosely called as cookies. They're just kind of like weird hunks. But they make a pretty decent ass breakfast. I'll tell you that. This is what's happening in my life.
Cookies for breakfast. There are no rules anymore.
They're made with oatmeal. So it feels like.
Yeah, that's healthy.
Yeah.
I get excited when I go and eat things out of cans. So I'm fully now my chihuahuas. I just like, I wag my tail when I get an Amy soup delivered. So we're doing great.
Only the fanciest of soups for Danny Murphy.
I'm building my own empire.
You're building a soup empire?
Move over, Campbell.
No soup for you. Guys, just I'll watch Seinfeld, I guess. Maybe I'll start watching that.
Yeah.
Need something new.
Now that Tiger King is like no longer a part of our lives, except for the memes, what are you guys watching?
I wish I was being literally Desperate Housewives for those words.
So I started Drag Race, and that was pretty.
Oh, you did!
Exciting. I started Drag Race.
Oh, good.
I can't believe I have never been. I haven't done it before. I've seen like episodes here and there, but it is truly the most fun. I started with season 5, which I was recommended to start by many people, and then I'm going to go to 6, and then I'm going to go back down to 4. I was told I'm supposed to skip
like Star
7.
Wars.
Mm-hmm. So I'm told I'm supposed to skip seven.
Yeah.
Well, I was listening to a podcast that talked about this, one of the drag queens on this new season who like scammed all these people by pretending to be a fake casting agent.
Yes.
So I kind of want to cover that. I think it would be pretty crazy.
Yeah. Because then she got him to like send like all these like kind of pictures. Some guy was just like, she got somebody to send in pictures of himself, like shooting up steroids. Or something. Yeah. Very wild.
I think that would be a good episode. Another good episode I got last night in the Facebook, or they messaged the Facebook page, was like this company called, fuck, I forgot what it, like Ambrosius or something like that. And it was basically just like a bootleg Theranos, if you can imagine, because Theranos is already so bootleg. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that could be a good episode too, but keep sending in your suggestions for episodes, guys. I feel like now more than ever, we need the suggestions.
Cause this one was for like, they put young blood in your system or something like that. What are they draining babies? How are they getting young
blood? Yeah, it reminds me of The Watcher when he's like, yes, I love all the young blood in the house.
Yeah.
So creepy. but yeah, maybe we'll cover those in the coming weeks.
Some of it, maybe we'll cover like the creepy things that have unearthed during the quarantine, the weird shit that we're finding on the internet.
Oh my God. Yeah.
I only trust us to try and find out what actually to get like concrete proof of what happened to Carol's husband. I leave it up.
Oh, I kind of want to do an episode on it, but frankly, I was researching it and there's, not a whole lot of information, obviously.
Yeah. Carol covered it up.
Drive down there, touch no one, Clorox wipes, and do some digging.
Yes. Love it. But today's episode, I don't know why we decided this, but it's super depressing. So if you need something else to be depressed about that's not the pandemic, we got you. Yes.
Well, we decided it because we've gotten a bunch of requests for it. Also, because it's got sometimes a lot of interesting
requests,
things.
I know, but sometimes the requests we get, I'm like, oh, y'all are dark.
That's what I'm saying. True crime fans, you guys are the best kind of bummers.
new tagline.
The best kind of bummers. There's a documentary coming out next week. There's a documentary coming out when this gets released tomorrow, called A Thread of Deceit. And so I think it drummed up new curiosity about it. So we got messages.
That also sums us up perfectly. We were like, oh my God, we're going to be early to this case getting so big. There's a new documentary going out everywhere. We don't know where it's being released. It's being released on services. So that could either be Vimeo or Netflix. So we'll watch it.
Vimeo.
But I remember hearing about it.
What does IMDb say?
Yeah, it only says streaming services.
That is sketch.
It's very much like on 30 Rock, my single is dropping. So who knows where it's going to be.
Love it.
I've been rewatching 30 Rock too because you need a little happiness in these times.
Oh yeah. I started that with makes me laugh. Like,
oh my God. So great.
All iconic.
Which is really also bringing me back. Oh, but we'll talk about the case now.
Oh yeah. I was going to say we could do that or just make this a TV podcast, which it semi is.
I know.
And you know what? If we do, who gonna check me, boo? We'll do whatever podcast we want.
Yes.
Truly.
Exactly. No rules. 2020. Literally. Okay, so we're talking about the Hart family.
Mm-hmm.
Jen and Sarah Hart.
The lesbian couple with the six black kids. I'm just gonna say it because that's what most people know the case as.
That is an accurate description.
Love it. Yes.
So Jen and Sarah were both originally from South Dakota. They attended Northern State University in Aberdeen, South Dakota. Never heard of it. They both majored in elementary education, and Jen ended up with a degree in special education. Sarah didn't end up graduating.
I think that was it. That might also be reversed. I wrote this and I kept getting Sarah and Jen confused.
I thought it was maybe the reverse because Sarah was the breadwinner kind of, but also at a department store where you presumably didn't need a 4-year degree. In any case, one of them graduated, one of them didn't.
Exactly.
Feel free to fact check us when this comes out.
Yes. You guys do all the time and we love it.
Yeah. So I read actually in a Glamour article that they kind of knew each other from childhood, but you said they met at the university.
I had read that they had met at the university. They both like grew up in the same town. I think that they
I read that they like knew each other growing up.
Like kind of near.
Yeah, it was like the thing where like when you know someone growing up, but like you never hung out and like you saw them at the grocery store and you're like, oh, that person's like in a like my history class.
Yeah.
They really got
Yeah. They like met and fell in love in college.
Right. Also, like, let's be real, there's probably two people in South Dakota. So
yeah.
They definitely knew of each other growing up.
Also, shout out, there was somebody that wanted to join the group. I sent you guys the picture, and their biggest, the crime that kept them up late at night was that they thought North Dakota wasn't real. Shout out, I forget who you were, but we do so not funny. Deserve you. We don't deserve you.
Oh, man, we love a true conspiracy queen.
Yes, we do.
So they kind of fall in love at university. They struggled with being accepted in the Midwest. They kind of told people they were friends or roommates before eventually coming out.
Yeah.
They claim that they lost a lot of friends after coming out, and so they ended up moving from the Midwest.
Yeah.
All right.
They thought that the Midwest mindset was kind of like unaccepting and unforgiving. But then they moved to Minnesota, which I don't really get. Because isn't Minnesota the Midwest, or am I? Do I not know where the Mid or the West is? Yeah. But I mean, they bounced around a lot.
So in 2004, they decided to try to grow their family. They fostered a 15-year-old girl, but they constantly complained to coworkers about their own foster child. And then literally one day they took her to their therapist's office and then never came back. And they just said that the girl wasn't a fit for them, which I feel like you just cannot do. Like, this is not Macy's. You can't just return your child. And then the therapist never heard from Jen and Sarah again. They were kind of in the wind. And this girl has also said that before they dropped her off, they would constantly talk about how they wanted to adopt other kids and she would get to be a big sister and like they would have this family, which they did end up eventually doing, but wow.
But yeah, they like promised this girl, they like talked to her about if she was going to be a family and then just like dropped her off one day and just never spoke to her again. And the girls, like, yeah.
I just feel like how can you do that? I feel like that's not how that works.
It's also interesting too, because they were relatively young when they adopted her. They were only in like their mid-20s. I mean, obviously that is an age where people are having kids, but for them, a lot of their coworkers I know were even saying that they felt that they were ill-equipped to be raising because they adopted her, the girl.
They fostered her. Yeah.
They fostered her. Yeah. So they're keeping she's keeping her name mainly anonymous, but she's been going by Lee in interviews. And she was like not like a baby when they got her. So it's kind of it was an interesting moment of like these 26-year-olds adopting someone who was like a teenager and trying to make that work.
Yeah. So I bet there was a lot of butting of heads with like a girl. So I think that's like when you foster, like they've already kind of been to a bunch of different families. So I think they already kind of feel a little like you know, they've already lived a bunch of lives. And I think, yeah, when you're a teenager anyway, you just kind of butt heads with your parents. But I think like reading when they interviewed her, she didn't say that there was like, she didn't talk about how there was like a problem. Like that's what was so weird is that she said that they were kind of like included her in the family, but then they were just going behind her back and like talking shit about her, which was just kind of wild to me.
Weird.
Yeah, totally.
So then in March 2006, the Harts adopted Abigail, Hannah, and Marcus, three siblings that, again, they adopted after their parents had basically had their parental rights taken away. And then in June 2008, they adopted three more kids, Sierra, Devante, and Jeremiah, after the mother had her parental rights taken away because she had a substance abuse problem. I feel like there's an interesting thing because I don't know if I should bring this up right now.
What is it?
Did you talk about the aunt?
I didn't say anything about the aunt. You can bring up the aunt.
Okay. One interesting thing about this that didn't come out until a lot later was that actually these three kids did have an aunt who was in the picture who was really fighting for custody. But like, I don't know, the court system just like did not grant her custody. Yeah. And they also ended up changing the spelling of Sierra's name. And I wondered, in the Glamour article that I read, it seemed like they kind of did that to maybe try to elude the courts, but it wasn't really clear like why they did that. Mm-hmm. But I think it was just pretty sad that there was like a viable family member who was around to like possibly take care of these kids. Danny. Well,
it was a thing too that people were even saying, and we can get into it after finishing the case, that was there could be like lookbacks of how race played a factor into this, because the aunt never had a part like driving ticket, was like an upstanding citizen, really was never showing any signs that she was ill fit to foster and take these kids that were related to her under her wing and in her home. And everyone is still kind of confused why they just clearly refused her of that potential or ability.
Well, apparently the reason why they refused her is that the aunt let the mom babysit the kids, and the mom was supposed to have no contact with the kids because she was unfit. And she was, you know, like, I think it was Jeremiah had tested positive for cocaine when he was born. So basically the mom was not to have any contact with the kids. And the courts found out that the aunt was letting the mom babysit at times.
I think that
played
a
factor. So yeah. So even though there was this family member who was like, I got this, I think that there was just a couple things in that kind of ended up playing a part, which is a bummer.
Yeah, this case is interesting to me because it's kind of like almost the opposite of what happened in the Gabriel Fernandez story. Like, in Gabriel Fernandez, like, they kept him with the mother again, even though it was so bad, because at that time, like, the prevailing theory was like, you want to keep families together. And here, like, the opposite happened. Yeah. And also what I thought was pretty crazy too was like, Devante was actually like well known. Like, he'd had a few media moments, and one of them was like, there's this viral picture of him crying and hugging a police officer during a protest about what happened in Ferguson in 2014. Yeah. And there was, I don't know, there was like a pretty interesting backstory to that photo. But if you Google it, it's like pretty well known. They call themselves the Heart Tribe, which I feel is already a crime.
Yeah.
So they had six kids. Sarah and Jen got married in 2009, and they got married in Connecticut, where gay marriage was legal.
Yeah, I think the only witnesses were the kids, too.
Yes, that's what they said. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They also claimed that it was because they didn't have any other support system, like just their own adopted kids, which is like kind of bleak. And so then after they got married, Jennifer became a stay-at-home mom. Sarah managed Kohl's, and they also received money from the state for their children that made up half their income. So they were like barely making ends meet. I also read that they had like a couple, like $10,000 or $16,000 of credit card debt. Like they were not living well.
Cause I think, yeah, Sarah, I think was only making, I think she made 45.
Yeah. Something like that.
But then they, for some reason, I guess the kids were originally from Texas. So they were adopted from the state. So the state of Texas paid them a decent amount of money. I guess paid them another $45,000 or $50,000 for the kids, but still, six kids that's expensive,
right?
No matter which way you slice
it. And on a retail manager salary.
Yeah, yeah, and I think at one point they both were working retail, but I think it just became like at a certain point, if you're only working to pay for childcare, like if one of the parents is only working to pay for childcare, it's like, I think at that point, you know, you switch to just becoming the stay-at-home.
Right. Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, I have friends that have done that. And it's like, well, I'm only working to pay for a babysitter, so why don't I just
be the babysitter?
Yeah.
Parent.
Why don't I just be the parent?
Yeah.
So essentially, the Hart family has painted themselves out to be this very enlightened, very, you know, calling themselves a tribe, being like, we're so great, and look at us. We did all this good. We adopted these siblings. Because
can I also bring up the fact that they were like deep into this like weird like fringe music festival culture?
Yeah, that's when they moved to Oregon.
Yeah. Okay. I'll talk about that later then. Sorry. I could spend like 10 minutes talking about this like bootleg Bonnaroo shit.
Yeah. If you look at the pictures of them all like dancing in neon, you're like, what the fuck was actually happening in this house? That's the real abuse.
Yeah.
But essentially, they were living in Minnesota for a bit, and things kind of their happy family facade kind of starts to crack when in 2008 a teacher noticed bruises on Hannah's arm, and Hannah tells the teacher, "Oh, Jennifer, her mom Jennifer hit her with a belt." it turns out that this case ended up being closed. The state claims that she fell. There was like an incident where she said she actually fell down the stairs. But, you know, the words are out there now. The words are out there. Danny, yeah.
I feel like it's, you notice throughout all of this too, the parents have an answer for everything down to a science where they're giving scripted answers to all these people that are expressing concerns.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They've got something. They know, like, the plans for everything. These people are, like, it's almost like textbook, you know? So this case was closed, saying that she fell. And then shortly after this incident, they pulled all six kids out of school for a year.
Come on. Is that not suspicious? Like,
yeah. They claim it's because that's what they had to do for, like, the system or something. Like, they claim they had, they had an excuse for that.
Yeah, they kind of like to lean on identity politics a lot.
They really did. They really were kind of like, everybody's just against us. And it's like, I don't know. There's, you know, Hannah was six at the time. Like, she has no reason to really lie about this, you know?
Right. So
all the kids are pulled out of school. In 2010 or 2011, Hannah wasn't six. 2010, 2011, this is the next allegation. Abigail was six. So this is another kid was six. And she was at school and she kept complaining to the teacher that she had owies on her back and her stomach, which is just the most kid way to say that. Aww. Which is so fucking heartbreaking, Nicole. I said she had owies. Apparently there was a kerfuffle at the home that she had a penny in her pocket, a fucking penny.
A penny.
1 cent. 1 cent. And Jennifer and Sarah thought that she stole it. So it's claimed that they held her head underwater, starved them, withheld food. And eventually Sarah admitted that she did spank her over a tub, even though Abigail said it was Jen who hit her.
But over a Sarah, penny.
Over a penny. Over because she thought she was lying. Abigail said it was Jen that was hit her, but Sarah is the one that admitted it. So already that's like a little bit of a red flag, you know, that Jen is kind of like, if Sarah's like taking admittance, like it just... Jen was definitely like the main disciplinary. So Jen pled guilty to assault and she was sentenced to community service for a year. I also read that she got 90 days in jail, but I don't think I saw that she ever,
Wait, so Sarah pled guilty.
Sarah pled guilty, even though Abigail said that Jen is the one that hit her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She was able to get jail time down to just like doing like probation. So it was 90 day probation, not jail.
90 day probation. Okay. And then community service for a year. So that's two allegations right there. In 2011, also Hannah told a school nurse that she hadn't eaten all day. And I guess when they called the parents, Sarah was like, oh my God, she's playing the food card. Just give her some water, which is like just kind of cruel and fucking heartless.
Food card? Oh my God.
Yeah. Oh, she's playing the food card. And Sarah, you even said like, if you look at a picture of these kids, they're like, they're tiny. They're so skinny.
Yeah, I was looking at a picture of them. They're all like bent over some, you know, papers and they're painting. And they look like honestly skeletal. Like they really look malnourished. They don't look like, because I was reading, because they were constantly posting them on Facebook and they'd be like, oh yeah, there's my little string bean. Like, and it's like, that's not a string bean. That child is malnourished. Like anyone with two eyes can tell.
Yeah.
Like ribs were sticking out. It's not like, oh, you're just a little gangly. Ugh.
Yeah. It was really
sad.
It's like, it's kind of one of those things that it's like, you could just look at these kids and just use your eyes and know that like something wasn't that great. So after this incident about, Sarah pled guilty, all that stuff, all six children were then taken out of school again to be homeschooled and therefore isolated from the outside. And anybody that maybe would notice the abuse is kind of like the thought process on that. So now they've taken these kids and they've taken them completely away from other people. So like, they're just like in their own home all the time. Like, I mean, we've been quarantined for 20 days. I couldn't even imagine just being 10 and not being able to like leave my fucking house. Crazy. So after Minnesota, they ended up, after all this, they took them out, they moved to Oregon, which is where they got into this fucking weird music scene, and they were like known. Like they have all these like music friends with weird names like Zazu and Zimbabwe and like weird shit like that.
Well, there like, was one fuck, I can't remember it. It was so funny. It was not like it was like Shazam or something ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. So they kind of become like known in this festival circuit. And again, like Devante made, there's like a video of Devante like hugging one of the lead singers on stage. Like they were presenting themselves as this like cool family that's like, look at all of us. We just go dance at festivals and stuff like that. But meanwhile, still behind closed doors, authorities in Oregon kind of got wind of like everything that happened in Minnesota. So in 2013, they actually open up an investigation on the Harts. And they started interviewing friends and family who end up starting to paint like a very, very terrifying picture of what happens behind closed doors. They made allegations that the kids had to raise their hands before speaking, that they couldn't wish each other happy birthday. They couldn't laugh during dinner. They were underfed. There's one incident of them like where they ordered a pizza and they told the kids they could all have one piece only. And somebody, they found out that they had more than one piece. So they made them lie down on an air mattress for 5 hours. He said that the kids were just scared to death of Jennifer. And again, yeah, they would constantly punish them by not feeding them, which is just such a weird form. Like I don't know where in your brain that, like, how do you do that to a kid, you know?
Yeah. It's like beyond fucked up.
Yeah. Danny, what do you think?
Having no compassion, and it's so insane too that these are two people that are fostering children, which usually when someone does that, that means that they just have too much love to give or so much love to give to people, and that they're taking these kids, trying to give them, and everyone thinks that they're giving them a better life, and they're treating them worse than prisoners. Like yeah. they're like prisoners of their own like bodies because they can't even go out to live their own life or do anything like that. And all the punishments, it's just unthinkable.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like they said that these kids were almost like robots. Like they would walk single file into the car. They would walk single file into their rooms. And they had to be told, they were told when they were allowed to use the bathroom, like just some weird shit. People said like Jen ran the family like a boot camp, and that actual like this like facade of like, I love my kids. So they said the actual like true love and kindness and respect for the kids was just absent in the way that they treated them. And of course they had the children, like you said, Sarah, like they had an answer for everything. So they had the kids were like trained. So when they questioned the kids all had the same answer. And they were just like, we're grateful to be here. We're so thankful. But they were like very emotionless as they talked, which I think also is like, you know, anybody like, again, seeing this thing, if these kids all have blanket uniform answers, it's like, it just feels like it would have been coached, you know?
Yeah.
Jen, of course, like you said before, like Jen kind of always blames like intolerance and that people aren't understanding of lesbians with African-American children. And so she kind of would always like make that argument. So it turns out that this investigation was inconclusive, which is a bummer. So now this is two states that they have, there's allegations in both states. And this is kind of like we said, like they were very, very focused on presenting this united front. Like Jennifer was super, super active on Facebook. Like she would constantly post pictures of the kids and they were all posed and all this stuff. She was really trying to curate a social media presence that like, that they were this like socially conscious and happy family. And she would write these long diatribes about raising happy family and the challenges to society and blah, 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 blah. But people that knew them were like, she would pose those kids and they would smile. And then after the pictures were taken, they would go back to looking like lifeless and just sad. Oh, it's just, it's
there was one metaphor that I thought was like so well done in this Glamour article where they said like they posted these pictures of like the kids all painting. I think the one that I saw where they looked really skinny.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, look, our little Jackson Pollocks. But then someone noticed like if you looked closely, none of the paintbrushes even had paint on them.
That's so wild.
Yeah.
And also what they would talk about on Facebook so much and things like that, they would just be like, oh, they would try and complain and talk about how their kids were so not well-behaved and be like, well, who else would take care of them? Who would save these kids if not us? So they really got themselves on a God complex, having everyone worship them. And for the most part, the people that weren't that up to date and close with them did think that they were such great people. And it started to get more interesting and kind of come to a head when they moved to Washington. So this was, I mean, move 88 for them. They've been all over the place. And this is also, if you read the Glamour article, which we all read and has a lot of information about this.
Yeah, the Glamour article's great.
It kind of kicks off. So in August 2017, Hannah jumped out of their second story window and runs to the neighbors, the DeKalbs, who are interviewed for the Glamour article. So she goes to their house saying, "Don't make me go back there. They are racist and they abuse us." Which just, if you imagine in the middle of the night being woken up and your next door neighbor's child just comes over and says that, you're of course worried and on edge and wanting to help them out. So I know after she said that, the daughter Hannah just kind of ran upstairs and wanted to just truly hide anywhere to get away from her parents.
Yeah.
Jen and Sarah then of course start looking around for Hannah, like flashlights, have all the kids coming over, and get to the point where they go to the neighbor's house, the DeKalbs, and they don't even like ask to go in. They just barge in.
Yeah, they just like stormed that house, ran up to their bedroom. I'd be like, excuse me, what the hell?
Yeah.
Get out of my fucking house.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then they go on to, of course, kind of what we've been over, we've been saying throughout all of this is that they just read their script that she's a drug baby. They act out. We don't know what to do. We don't know how to like help them out and things like that, which is just sort of, and like then also saying that the mother was bipolar. So there could be like her biological mom. So there could be traces of that. So then the DeKalbs are also kind of wondering, they're like, all of that, I guess, can make sense, but I'm still concerned that a child came over being very concerned about her little livelihood.
She jumped out a fucking window.
To get away from her parents.
And she had no front teeth.
So that was the other thing. She had no front teeth, and saying that she was.
Also, she looked like she was 12, but she was 16.
She was 16, yeah.
Like, if you look at pictures, it was crazy.
So the next day, they made Hannah write a note saying that she made it all up for attention and refused to let, and then they refused to let her speak alone with the neighbors, stating, "We do everything as a family." So Hannah wrote them this note that even the DeKalbs were like, this is not the way a child would write a note or talk. Like, this sounded, it looked like she was coerced into writing every sentence, and that they all speak as a family unit type of situation. Of course, though, the neighbors reported this because how could you not? But no action was taken until March.
That was in August.
Yeah, whenever something was reported from them, literally no one did anything.
Well, I think it was also because, like, they didn't report it until much later. And also, they were kind of seeing if anything else was happening by that time. But, like, nothing was happening because the kids weren't really allowed out of the house.
And the blinds were always drawn in the house. So, like, because the mom, DeKalb, was, like, trying to creep. She's like, I became obsessed with these people.
I was going to say, she wasn't me because she was just retired doing, like, laps around their property just to, like, peek in or something happening. So then also some their other children have interacted with the DeKalbs. Devontae was constantly, he one time just went over to the like Mr. DeKalb and was just like, can you get me like Tostitos, like just like tortilla chips? So then like they would just kind of set up this whole thing where Devontae, even like they would keep on giving him food, and even got to the point where they would leave like a cardboard box full of food hidden into by the fence so that the Jen and Sarah wouldn't see it, and that the kids could literally get nourishment and just like food that kids would want too.
Yeah,
they were just giving them like peanut butter, protein bars,
and it was literally all the food that I got from for pandemic shopping. So then they went to the part where on so the neighbors reported the Hards to CPS on March 23rd, and at this point too, Mrs. DeKalb was taking notes and recording things Devontae said because she wanted proof and evidence and stuff like that to go to CPS, Child Protective Services.
So they couldn't like ignore her to be like, hey, stay out of their business.
Exactly. So on March 24th, right, a day after they were reported to the CPS, the car is gone and Sarah texts a coworker at 3 a.m. saying she is too sick to go to work and no one could get a hold of her after that. CPS tried to go to the house that day, but no one was there. And I guess CPS, you can't really barge it. They literally left like a UPS note, like we'll come back tomorrow type of situation. Yeah. Which I was surprised because I thought they would be a little more proactive for cases of like child endangerment. But I guess it's kind of like, maybe it's unfortunately like something you learn or you do just for the job. So then they came Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of that week, and no one was home. And authorities say that when they went into the home, because what happens next is the main case of this. So they go into the home, and it was neat and orderly, but it seemed like nothing was decorated for a family home. Like, there was, like, Star Wars toys, but in a very clean, pristine situation. You go into the kids' room. They all shared one room, for the most part, the kids. There were no decorations, no toys, no anything.
Yeah.
There was luggage left behind that they didn't take when they went into the car. And as we know now, what happened was that they all drove off a cliff. So this happened on March 26, 2018. Jennifer drives her SUV, and with her, it's Sarah and the six children off of a cliff in Mendocino, California, 500 miles from their house.
Yeah.
So Sarah was in the backseat. So it was Jennifer driving, and it was seen that Jennifer was very much above the legal drinking limit for driving. And on top of that, Sarah and all of the kids had a concoction of some sleeping pills and stuff like that.
Like, so, Benadryl, I read.
Yeah. I thought it was only two of the kids. Was it all of the kids?
I thought it was all. Because I know things like, because before this, Sarah Googled death by drowning relatively painless.
Yeah.
How long to die from hypothermia in water while drowning in a car.
Jesus.
And other searches were, how easily can I overdose over-the-counter medication?
Yeah.
Can 500 milligrams of Benadryl kill a 125-pound woman?
Yeah. So
these searches going on with this. Also kind of like, to note too, while Sarah was Googling that, and this is just, I mean, this is the nature of our podcast. When people were looking at the footage of Jennifer stopping at a gas station getting
Chef Boyardee. Like ravioli.
In the footage, everyone was like, she looks like 25 pounds overweight, which I just had to like.
People noticed that she looked a lot heavier than she ever had been.
In a CCTV camera in fucking 7-Eleven or where it was. It's so crazy. Yeah.
That's also where I feel like my weight gain would be noticed. Everyone would see me at a 7-Eleven buying spicy chili nacho Doritos. They're like, he doesn't look great. And the reason that obviously this could be thought of in a lot of different ways, people would be like, oh, was it just an accident? The people who think that the kids, they love their family and stuff like that. But there were no skid marks to show evidence of the car slowing down. So it kind of showed that it was just the acceleration of going off the cliff.
And yeah, I thought, yeah. And in fact, they showed that she had accelerated before going off the cliff, not just not braked.
Yeah, she pulled out.
All the bodies were found in or around the car that landed upside down on the beach, except Devante's. But because he was, we said, in the car, he was declared dead as well.
I kind of read that they weren't sure if he was there. They thought that maybe they had killed him before they took all the kids in the car. Like, I thought that they weren't really sure if Devante was in the car or not.
They ended up doing a, they declare, they get a death, oh my God, I can't talk.
Right.
They
I know that he's been declared legally dead, but they don't really know if he was in the crash.
They didn't find his body. They think they're just kind of assuming.
And I know what's interesting too, because people ended up Facebook messaging the DeKalbs, being like, can you look in their backyard for a body? Can you dig up around there? And they were kind of like,
no.
Do that. No.
Yeah.
Like, let someone else, like, that's not our place to do that. So when we were saying that Jennifer had a alcohol blood level that was too high. So she had 5 beers, which was kind of enough to get her drunk, because people say that she rarely drank, which is shocking, because if I went to any of those music festivals that they did, I would need to be on a different plane.
I was going
to
say, a casual night for me and Danny, 5 beers, not for Jennifer, who didn't drink.
I'm counting boxes, not glasses of wine this morning. I'm not.
Yeah, we're doing boxes. Danny, did you mention also, like, again, this, no, the kids weren't even buckled in. Like, this was not even a little bit of an accident. Like, this was really planned. I mean, it's just so crazy, because I think, like, there were also reports that Jen was, like, having a really hard time, that there were some times when she would just, I think, like, go into her room and just, like, not deal with the kids. Like, she would call Sarah at work all the time and be like, the kids are driving me crazy. And Sarah, you mentioned they had debt. Like, I think there was, like, a lot of things happening in this family that were like just below the surface.
Yeah. And I think that's totally even kind of been a thing with Jen too, because when they were working together, another reason why Jen stopped working is because I know it was reported that she would always have like panic attacks and anxiety just from doing normal tasks that they were supposed to do for the job. She just couldn't handle that. I feel like stress got to her in obviously very intense, insane ways too. So she would always act out from this, but never to this.
Yeah, this is just, there's also like a lot of speculation that like all the allegations were catching up, which is like, I don't think there's a coincidence that they left the day after CPS finally came to their house. Because a lot of people think like, oh, okay, they had this mentality, like, if I can't have my kids, nobody can have them. And I think they just kind of like ran with that. Because I think all the allegations were about to catch up to them. And it was about to be like, you know, I mean, I don't know where in your brain that you go instead of facing like jail time, like, let's just kill everyone. Like, it's just a really, like, you got to think that they must have been like in such a dark place to go to there. You know?
That's like, that's going to the point of no return and being, it's sort of insane because they physically have been running from their problems and these lies and the awful things that they've been doing by literally moving state to state. And now I feel like they truly got to the end of the road and they had nowhere else to go. They felt that they were too dug down and then this was their only escape. And I know it was kind of insane too, a weird twist that because they had the $16,000 credit card debt. It was somehow like a Chase payment was made to it the day that they died.
Yeah, they were like paying it off like the day that they drove off the cliff.
Yeah, I read that a payment was posted that day. I kind of wonder if they were intending to run away to California, but then kind of did this as like just a semi-split second decision.
But then there's the whole thing that they didn't pack any luggage or bring their toothbrushes. So like to me that feels like,
I guess I'm just like, why would you drive so far to drive off a cliff? And they were still kind of researching ways to die. Like, I don't think the cliff was their necessarily their plan.
Well, I don't know. It sounds like if they were looking up like drowning in a car and all that kind of stuff, it looks like they were trying to get to water, to like drive into water.
I wonder if they were like, they knew that they were going to probably kill everyone, but then were like figuring out what they were doing as they were going on this trip. Cause they drove like a few hundred miles, I think.
500.
Yeah.
It's also crazy like to think that, like, I don't know if I would love anybody enough to let them convince me to do that. Like, how did they get on board with each other to be like, this is the only answer?
But I feel like Jen must have come up with it. And then Sarah was the enabler. Cause that was what people kind of said of their entire relationship.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was wondering what you guys thought too. Cause since Jen was the one who was drinking and Sarah was passed out, do you feel that this was, Sarah knew that they were going to be going off the cliff, do you feel? Or do you think Jen was kind of her rash, like, this is just what I want, like, this is what I think is the way out?
But wasn't Sarah the one Googling stuff?
Sarah was Googling stuff in the car, yeah, about that. Also, they said, like, that Jen had to drink to kind of get the courage to do it. So, like, I don't know. Like, I just don't know what kind of mind frame you have to be in to decide on a murder-suicide, you know? Like, they're not the first people to do it, obviously. Like, it's just, I don't know when you have six kids involved, how that ever becomes the answer. Like, it's just,
yeah, it's like especially upsetting to me when I just like look at the kids and like, oh, I hate when we do stuff about kids.
I know.
And that's why I do this quote from someone who worked for CPS did say, and I do think it's so true, especially with this case. They said, when I bring up this case in the professional community, there is a heaviness. We all feel guilty because it's the professional's fault. And perhaps more chilling, the smoke and mirrors of a compelling digital narrative clouded our sense of civic responsibility. Because that is one of the major scapegoats that they used throughout this entire case and story, is that they posted that they were taking their kids to Black Lives Matter protests and Bernie Sanders conventions.
I read that they one time woke up their kids at 4 a.m. to get them to a Bernie Sanders rally. Like, what the fuck?
Really?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. I think they said that in the Broken Hearts podcast.
Because that's the photo in the Glamour magazine article. The head photo is from that protest. So it's sort of, it's a thing too with the digital narrative they created. They really use these kids as like props in a sense to
help propel totally.
Being these social warriors that are so downtrodden and no one supports them and they are kind of just out here on their own. And like just constantly posting these updates to their Facebook to get some, I don't know, validation or just to sell this narrative for whatever reason.
I think both, because Jen was the one who was active on Facebook. Sarah didn't even have one, I don't think. I think this is interesting because there's like a lot at play, like the identity politics and like, you know, white privilege, like play into it big time. Also, there's this huge like systemic failure, which like, again, reminded me of the Gabriel Fernandez documentary, which, guys, we're not doing an episode on it. I'm sorry,
no,
but
it's too
so
bad.
It's so sad. Like, we're not doing an episode on it. So these are just my thoughts.
No, I don't want to either.
One thing that I read that was interesting about this case was that I think the Oregon officials like made the case like records public because they were like, we want everybody to learn from this fuck up so it doesn't happen again.
That's good.
Yeah, yeah, but they still haven't that. Well, yeah, I think what they said with the most eye-opening thing is that, like, there's no national database for child abuse allegations. So like the allegations for these kids spanned like three different states.
Yeah.
Or like they had allegations and all these different things. And there's nowhere like that says that, like, that this doesn't follow, like, essentially.
Right. It's pretty mind blowing.
Packing up. Yeah. They can keep packing up and leaving with their child. But it's like, if you're going to abuse your, like, it's like, at a certain point, I have to think, like, if you take the energy to pack up your kids every time to move away from these allegations, like, you don't want the kids. Like, I'm like, you know what I mean? Like, how do you want, if you can keep doing this to the kids, like, it's like, it just seems like so much energy to like cover it up when it's like, I'm sure that they could have gone back to like the thing in Texas and been like, you know what? I feel like
for them, it's like two things, like almost kind of like, not a status symbol, but it like now it's a part of their identity in this narrative that they're using to like honestly get Facebook points and like internet fame.
Yeah.
And I think in their own like fucked up, I don't know, I think in their own fucked up way, they like thought they wanted to be parents, but like obviously don't.
And I know what happens a lot with people fostering kids, and I've like seen this both in cases and on SVU
go to the facts.
Their children, because they get the $450 for the kids, so they get the check from the kids when they're in a money situation, so they can kind of collect those, and then that's money that should be getting them the bagels and the fruits and the school supplies and to help out.
That was one thing that I was definitely wondering was like, did they adopt all these kids and not feed them so then they could take more money for themselves?
Yeah, that's what's so sad. Like, and I mean, I don't know a lot about it, but there's definitely like the foster system, I think, has a lot of people in it that do abuse it just to get paid and don't actually do it for the kids, which just is, again, a thing that's heartbreaking on its own and an effective thing, like we said, about like the system and stuff like that. And I don't know, man. You'd think that they do decent background checks, but I think at a certain point, there's so many kids that sometimes I think they probably end up not doing what they should do just in order to place these kids. And again, like, three siblings are hard to place. So I think anybody that's like, I'll take them, they're kind of just like, yeah, go.
I mean, also they said like Black children are harder to place.
Yeah. Yeah.
And these kids are older too. They weren't adopted like as babies. They were like,
I think they were like,
you know, adolescents, I think, or
4, 6 and 8 or 2, 4, I think, or maybe 2, 4, 6. Cause one of their diatribes when they first adopted it, like Danny was saying, was that they were like, oh, she's rubbing her feces on the wall and he's peeing on everything.
Yeah.
They kind of were talking about them like as if they were like young babies and how they were having, or like young kids, not babies.
Yeah. But they like weren't, toddlers. They were like, kids, like they were not, you know, when they were adopted.
That's an interesting thing too, that they would just make up those stories, because I was the Lee girl, we're basing it off from the Lee girl who was their first child that they fostered, who they just left at the therapist's office. People were saying, oh yeah, they said that you just ate out of the trash all the time. And she was like, I never did that. No,
yeah.
That wasn't.
Yeah.
It's just also create these own narratives in their head. And going back to that, they were adopted as kids, as like siblings too. One of them, like such a heartbreaking thing was Devante saying to the DeKalb neighbors, like, please save us, but I can't leave my siblings. I don't want to leave them. I would rather be with them all.
Yeah, together. He's like, they'll separate us. Don't tell them they'll separate us, which also sounds, that part sounded to me like the parents telling them like, oh yeah, you want to tell on us? They're going to separate you guys. They're going to separate you guys. Like that to me felt like that was part of that, like some kind of like psychological abuse. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm trying to figure out how old they were. Yeah. This whole case.
Marcus was like 19 and by the time that they died,
yeah.
But still like if he was adopted at the same time as his other siblings, he would have been like obviously older. But I also remember this quote when they were like, oh, is he going to get out of the house soon? And they were like, we hope not.
Oh, I know. They're like, we hope he won't leave us.
Which is just so chilling. Cause it's like, again, if you don't want to be parents to these kids, like why not let him just leave?
Yeah. Okay. So it looks like the youngest when they adopted was 4. Yeah. Cause Hannah was 4 when they adopted her. And I think they were all 2 years apart. So I think, yeah. And Sierra was also, so they weren't baby babies, but they were like, they were young enough to be kind of like, you know,
mm-hmm.
really messed up from starting the abuse, like really young, you know?
Oh, totally. Yeah. I just meant that to say, like, it must have been harder for them to get placed, and maybe that's how they ended up in this family that was like so terrible.
Oh yeah. I think anything over a baby, I think most of the time people don't want anything like a child that's over like 1 or 2, like they want to raise it as like a baby on their own. So yeah, I think you're right. It's like when a kid is 4 and they've got 2 siblings, not a lot of people are jumping to adopt 6 kind of
right
kids, but that are already a little bit people, you know, like they're already
really sad. Ugh,
this is a doozy.
Heartbreaking. It's truly just tragic.
Heartbreaking.
And the thing
I mean, that was not on purpose.
Not on purpose. I swear.
No. Yeah. But
are you guys going to watch the documentary when it comes out?
I would watch it.
Yeah. If I find out what streaming service it's on.
Yeah. As long as there's more information than that streams. Let's see. It's called Thread of Deceit, which we all agreed is the worst fucking name.
I don't really get what that's supposed to mean. Like,
I don't know. Let's see. Thread of Deceit documentary.
Like, I feel like it would have been better off called like status update, because she did so many statuses on Facebook and like they would like digitally like put all them on it, kind of like how why am I blanking on her name? The girl with the eyebrows, Michelle Carter.
Oh my God.
Oh yeah.
I guess they could do that with the status updates. Again, why we need to be producing all of these things.
Let's see. Oh, it says it will be available on video and demand on all digital platforms.
That seems like a lie. They're just like all of them, every single one.
Everybody's?
I don't believe it. Suspect.
First one to find the documentary on the 7th.
Yes, wins a shout out.
Yeah. First person, if you guys can find it tomorrow, send it to us. We'll send you a virtual hug. Not that you want a hug from us. We'll send you something.
Yeah, they're all running to get that virtual hug now.
Don't they want the virtual hug?
Give me like a high five, like a free Cameo shout out. None of us are on Cameo, but maybe we should be.
Yeah, maybe we'll do a free
$1 Cameo videos.
Yeah, a shout out on the Facebook group. But yeah, so that, look out for that. This is, I mean, I don't know. I wonder if there's going to have anything, because I know that the Glamour article was very, and I think a lot of the articles that are out about this are stem from that one, because a lot of them have like the same quotes. So like, I'm interested really to see if there are any new, or if there's any other details that like, that weren't covered in that.
I kind of want to listen to the Glamour podcast, even though like, I mean, it overall has good reviews. There were a lot of people who pointed out like a lot of issues with it, but I don't have like 8 extra hours of my time, but I do kind of want to listen to it.
I know.
You do have 8 hours of time now. What else are you doing, Sarah?
I don't know. Like watching happy stuff.
This is true. I had something to say and I just totally fucking forgot. I know what I was going to say. They say that this is just like a really tricky one because there's so many unanswered questions and there's nobody to ask about them because everybody involved is now perished. I did read that they did have family members, like one of their parents, Jen's or Sarah's parents, was set to set up a memorial for them, but it actually never happened.
Oh, yeah.
So, I can't imagine
finding
out that your kid did something that horrifying.
Yeah. But apparently there were still like all of these, like we were talking about the weird like music people that they knew. There was like a lot of those people that were defending them that were like, these people could never, there's no way that they did this. So I think the documentary is going to have a lot of those people and a lot of people I read that kind of like were scared to admit that maybe they were wrong about them. So I think there will be some juicy stuff, but I really am interested to see these music artists that were like, no way, man, because the evidence is there.
With Shazam and whoever else. That's not a real name.
Zimeo.
Well, that's my favorite too. None of them are successful enough to be busy. So they're definitely all in this documentary too.
Yeah. This is now their credit, on their music pages is now in the documentary.
But we never talked about, I feel like the real crime is that they were the types of assholes who brought their kids to festivals.
Should have been arrested from
we could have had a whole 5-minute chat about that, but fine, it's a footnote at the end. Don't bring your kids to festivals.
Yeah, no, it's just they like dressed so them weird. Up
and I
yeah.
feel like it's not appropriate and like we just want to do Molly in a field. Like I don't want a 7-year-old next to me.
I was like, I'm not bringing my dignity to a festival. Don't bring your strollers.
Right. Literally.
Well, they said that these festivals were like yoga and like all this stuff. Like, and so I see the ads for that kind of shit all the time.
Nah, I see the ads for those types of things all the time. And they're just like, kind of like mini burns. And yeah, you can bring your kids
to burn. Yeah.
And I don't think you should do that either. I'm consistent in my beliefs about this.
No, I think the same way. I also never want to go to Burning Man ever. I kind of actually do just want to see it, but I think the actual act of going to Burning Man and like when I'm there in play, I'd be like, I want to be at a hotel.
No, I love music festivals and I camp at music festivals and even I would not go to Burning Man because it's a week. And it's not even really a music festival. Like there's not a schedule or organized acts. Like you just go to fuck around and do a bunch of drugs in a desert.
You do drugs with people who do investment banking. Like, it doesn't make sense.
I like the costume aspect of it, though. Like, when people are like, I bring feathers and I'm the crow of the castle at Burning Man. I'm like, that seems like a fun role to play.
Yeah. I think it would be fun for, like, a few days, but not an entire week.
Yeah. A week seems like by the end of it, you'd feel like you were in quarantine. You're like, oh, it's still just dust and no toilet paper. Okay, cool.
You'd be like a shell of a person, like subsisting on nothing but uppers and like mimosas for like
That's 7 days.
Uppers and champagne.
Yeah. Uppers and champagne.
In other words, mine and Danny's quarantine diet.
Yeah. That's kind of mine too. Mine's more like red wine and mac and cheese.
Ooh, I love that. Oh, sounds delish.
You know, I'm taking all the time to eat like I'm at a 7-year-old's birthday party during quarantine.
Great.
Yes.
Also, I wanted to say before we go, so we dropped this amazing Tiger King merch on Shop Etches.
Oh, yeah.
So check it out. We have a mug that says Carol Baskin did it or killed her husband. I forget. We have a shirt that says, hey, all you cool cats and kittens. We have a camouflage baseball cap that says Joe Exotic 2020. So make sure you shop it right away because it's probably going to sell out. I ordered 2 of those items yesterday.
Did you get the hat and the shirt?
I sure did, but the hat is for my friend.
Love it.
Yeah.
Okay, I want to. Yeah, I'm going to order it too.
So definitely order that stuff. And then also we have like a whole line on Shop Etches too. Like we have some fun mugs and like wine glasses and stuff.
Yeah, so, I drink out of my True Crime and Chill coffee mug. I love it.
Yay, so cute.
Also follow us on Instagram at NATCpod. Join the Facebook group, not another true crime group. You can follow me on Instagram, Sarah F. Carter, no H.
I'm Kashmir Danny with a K.
And I'm Case Face B with a C.
And send us your guys' thoughts. Send us suggestions for future episodes. Send us what you're drinking during quarantine.
Yes.
We'll just have some fun.
Well, we technically still have that episode from like 4 weeks ago that will be coming at some point that sounds like we're like living in the real world. Don't worry. We are not. We are in our homes. There are no bras on. Everything's happening. Don't worry.
Truth.
Let's do a fun, like scam, like a less depressing one.
I want to do the Drag Race scam or the blood one.
Let's do them both.
Yes.
The drag one and the what one?
The blood one.
Oh yeah. Let's do both.
Cool.
Let's figure it out.
Yeah.
All right. So next week coming at you, we'll be a little lighter.
All right. Thanks everybody for listening to another episode of Not Another True Crime Podcast, and have a good day to everyone except Carol Baskin and Jeff Lowe.
Betches.